How do I look? Does the camera get my whole face or just this part? Thanks, Patrick. My name's Francis. I'm an alcoholic and I'm an addict. Shit, what a rush. Thanks for the intro. Did I really say that? I want to, I know we don't do a newcomer thing here, but I know that you're there. So I want to welcome all the newcomers and say that if you think you have a problem with drugs and alcohol, this is a great place to be. Actually, it's for the newcomers that that I want to be here tonight, because you are a living example to me that on a daily basis that it still doesn't work out there. And believe me, if it did work out there, I'd go back out. But hey, come on, let's be honest. If we could drink, we would do it, okay? There's nothing real spiritual about getting your ass to this program. I came here like everybody else did because I drank too much and I didn't look very pretty when I did it. And if I could drink like a lady, I would still be out there, but I never really did anything like a lady, so... So anyways, I'm here, and you know, I started drinking when I was in seventh grade, and it was the usual thing. You know, there was this really cute girl, and she asked me if I wanted to do these drugs, and I said yes, and mostly I really liked her twin sister, and I wanted to do her, and I didn't really know that then, but kind of figured that out later. Anyhow, you know, I started doing drugs, and I started doing alcohol, and drugs are a big part of my story, and it's kind of hard anymore to differentiate it, but alcohol was kind of like my main thing. It was kind of like drinking water every day, and drugs were like the thing that I would like to do all the time, but I couldn't afford it, and you know, I bottomed out really quickly on drugs, and the alcohol was what finally brought me to these rooms. So drugs are a big part of my story. You know, from the time that I first drank that stuff, I felt great. I felt really good. And the reason that I felt good because I didn't feel anything. And that's what I wanted. There was a lot of shit going on at home. You know, most people here know what I'm talking about. My father is an alcoholic. My mother was not around, and I was sexually abused. And by the time the drugs and the alcohol were around, it saved my life. It saved my life because I didn't have to feel something that a 12-year-old shouldn't have to feel. So I have this weird kind of respect for alcohol and drugs today because of that. I really believe that I would be dead if it wasn't for that time in my life when I did drugs and alcohol. And, you know, the crazy thing about sobriety is that I would be dead today if I didn't stop doing them. So anyways, you know, I really don't know... Being the self-centered alcoholic that I am, I've thought for months about what the fuck I was going to say. And I was really okay until I hit the bed at night, and then I was a wreck. But you know, in the final analysis, it really doesn't matter what happened. Because it wasn't, when I came to AA, it wasn't what happened to me that kept me here. It was the feelings that I heard in these rooms that I related to, that made me feel like you guys felt how I felt. For the first time, I felt that in my life, that I belonged somewhere, that there were other people walking around who felt like they just beamed in from some other planet. And it was the first time that I heard people talk about despair and about loneliness and about not feeling like you fit in and about trying to be cool but being a total nerd and about that gut-wrenching pain, the hole inside of us. And it was the first time in my life that I had ever heard anybody talk about feelings like that. And it was what I related to. I didn't do that at first, of course. That took probably about 5 fucking years to get to that point. But at first, you know, I heard all this other stuff, like how many car wrecks people had gotten in and you know, all this stuff that they did. And, you know, it took me a long time, like about 5 years, to realize that I never got really in any car wrecks because I never had a car. And when I did get in car wrecks, because I did, it was somebody else's car, so that really didn't count. And I used those things to keep me separate from people in the rooms. And when I stopped using those things, those outside things about how exactly we got here, and stopped comparing my insides with your outsides, then I started believing and really feeling that I belonged here in AA and that I had come home. So that's what happened. See you later. Would it have been a slip if I did 2 Valium before I got up here? I'm still wondering that. This is after 12 years of being clean and sober. I still have thoughts like that. Wait, who am I again? Yeah. Come here. So, anyhow, on with the story. I know I have to tell the truth here because there's people here that know me that if I don't tell the truth, it's really hard. They're going to beat the shit out of me after this meeting. You know, I moved to San Francisco in 1976. Let's see, I got sober in 1980, so I think I'll just pull up people from the crowd to tell what happened during those years, because I really don't remember. I think that's one of the questions, the 20 questions was, did you ever have a lapse of memory when you were drinking? It's like, I don't remember, you know. No, I guess. That was another one. I read them over today. The other one was, the very first one. Did you ever miss work because you were drinking? Shit, no, man. I don't got a job. I think every newcomer should, as soon as they come in the program, we should give them the 20 questions. They should write down their answer, and then a year later we give it back to them. You know? When you start coming to and the denial starts fading away and you realize, oh yeah, I was like unemployable majorly. And so anyhow, I moved here in 1976 or something, whatever she said. And I immediately met her too. I'm sorry. at Kelly's Bar, if anyone remembers that lovely place. One of the nicer lesbian bars in San Francisco. That, Scots and Maud's, were kind of like where I lived for the next, I don't know how many years. And I'm proud to say that all of us are here tonight. So anyways, you know, it was kind of cool then, too, because it was like a party town. I was young. I didn't have wrinkles. Life was good. And I didn't know anything. You know, you don't have a consciousness, so you do fucking anything, and you don't care about it. And I don't remember even knowing what the word political meant. And so it was fun. You know, there was like a party on Castro Street all the time. I mean, at least there was in my head. And and I would love to go down there and be totally fucked up on Quaaludes and, you know, alcohol and that one bar that's still there. We used to go to like Maud's or Amelia's or something and stay there till 2 or 3 or, well, I guess I'm not supposed to say that. We would stay there a little longer than we should have. And then we would leave and we would go get even more fucked up and go hit this bar on Castro Street to play pool at 6 o'clock in the morning. And then we'd come out at about, or I would come out, I don't know who was with me then, by that time, God knows who was with me, and I would come out of the bar and it was like, that was my life. That was my life, and I thought that I had arrived, and I thought that that's what it was all about. And I don't know if anyone knew, I think people knew, but I was in a lot of fucking pain. I was in a lot of pain. I think a lot of people were. And I just didn't know what to do, you know, and I didn't know how I fit in everything. And all I knew how to do good was get fucked up. And that was my purpose in life, I thought, was to get totally smashed. I mean, I remember Jeannie picking me up from work one day, and I said, let's go to the bar, I want to get totally fucked up. And that was like what I always wanted to do. I remember being 16 and saying that I wanted to be, to my best friend, that I wanted to be a junkie when I grew up. These were my aspirations in life. So I'm here. I've attained my goals. A woman in this room tonight, Kyle, well, I think she's in this room, I know she's here last night. Kyle took me to my first AA meeting. Thank you. And in fact, I ran across a big book today. Funny, it was mine. And and Kyle wrote in this book, and this was in March in 1980, with this book, I also give you my love, strength, hope, and prayers for your journey. And, you know, when I read that this morning, I thought, wow, you know, here we still are. And there's a lot of talk. We talk a lot about, and sometimes in meetings, it's a very strange feeling to sit around in meetings and you see new people and new faces. And it's easy to sometimes feel like, well, where did everybody go that I got sober? And it's important for me to remember that most of them are still here. Most of the people that I got sober with are still in AA, are still sober, and are still alive. And I think that that's important to remember, because it's easy to focus on what's not here. And it's easy to focus on who has gone. And I'm not saying that I shouldn't remember that, because those are lessons for me, but I need to remember the people who are still here, who came in with me, and are still sober, and who helped me stay sober a day at a time, and taught me how to, like, live and be crazy and not drink. And that that was the point. The point was to not drink, even if my ass fell off. And so she took me to my first meeting. I thought it was the weirdest thing I'd ever been to. And I still think it's pretty weird, but I keep going. And, you know, I don't know who I thought I was, but I had a dark hat on and dark glasses, and I think I wore all black. I was sure someone was going to recognize me. Who the fuck I thought I was, I still don't know to this day. And, but I didn't get the simple things in AA. the simple little slogans, you know, if you don't want to, it's the first drink that gets you drunk. What the fuck, what does that mean? That's what Judy said last night. What does that mean, you know? And keep it simple. Well, there was nothing simple about my life. Let me tell you. It was very complicated. You know, if you don't, this one always got me too. If you don't want to, like, if you don't want to slip, stay out of slippery places. That one, like, really perplexed me. And for quite some time after March, in fact, from March to April, I continued to go attend my lovely bars and check in on my friends who were still drinking and using, because I missed them and I didn't know what to replace it with. I certainly didn't want to replace it with a bunch of fucking nerds who sat in AA and talked about God. And, but it was only, I love you now though, and it was only until I was in enough pain that I, because I think that that's the hardest part, is when you, the gig's up, you know you're an alcoholic, and you know you can't really drink or use anymore, and you've been to a couple AA meetings, so the serenity prayer is in your head, and you go out. That's a hellish place to be in. It was the worst part of my drinking. Because I would get drunk, and sometimes I wouldn't get drunk, and I would drink and I would hear the serenity prayer over and over and over in my head. And I would sit in the bar and I would see someone from these rooms come walking in the bar, and I'd grab a drink and I'd go into the bathroom. And, you know, and then I'd go back to AA, and it seemed like I raised my hand as a newcomer forever. And in fact, I did. I raised my hand as a newcomer from March to about April. I mean, March to about October. And it was very humiliating. I felt like something was wrong with me. I was one of these people who were inconstitutionally incapable of staying sober. But I finally surrendered October 25th, 1980, and haven't drank since then. And you know, it's not because I'm smart or because I figured out a lot of things or because things got instantly good that I have stayed sober. I've stayed sober because I finally got to a place of where I understood that to drink is to die. If I drink again, I die. And I know that. And, you know, it's like I was in a place where I was too scared to live, but I was too chicken shit to kill myself. And, but I was doing it, you know, I was just doing it the chicken way. I was drinking, and I was slitting my wrists, and I was overdosing, and it was just a matter of time. I was locked up a couple of times. You know, I thought the other day that the self-hate was so intense that I used to sit in front of the mirror and punch myself in the face before I left my house. I hated myself so much. For whatever reason, I internalized all this crap. And then, you know, I had been victimized so long, and then I just did it myself. And that's my responsibility, you know. And that's my responsibility today, is stopping to hurt myself and learning how to love myself a day at a time and accept myself as a human being. It's been necessary for me in AA to do a lot of strange things. You know, and I used to love that bumper sticker, sober and crazy, because that's kind of what it was like. The 12 years that I've been sober have been, like, really crazy. But, you know, it's like growing up. I came here when I was, Lauren, when I was, 24 or something, 25? 21. Well, I'm 37 now, you figure it out. So anyhow, you know, I grew up in AA. I feel like I grew up here in these rooms, and I didn't do it gracefully, and I'm still growing up, and it's really important for us to do that. It's really important for us, for me, not to look really good on the outside, because that stuff doesn't mean shit to me. And it took me a while in recovery to figure that out. You know, I thought that my program was a good program if I made X amount of dollars a year, if I had a certain kind of looking girl. And his name is Daniel, and who I choose to call Dash. And he's just a little baby, about three weeks old. And I couldn't introduce him, but I brought his picture so you all can see. So I'd like to give a welcome to Dash, who's in the room tonight. Keep coming back. It really does work. I had to do that for Nancy. She wouldn't let me put him underneath here and pull him out. I don't get it. So anyhow, I don't know what I've said, but I guess I'll find out when I buy the tape. Because you know I'm going to rush right out and buy it. I mentioned Dash because I had the honor of watching him come into the world and videotaping it. And I got it all on tape if anybody wants to see it. I'm going to get in big trouble for this. I'll probably go home. All my things will be out on the street. But anyhow, I wanted to mention him because he's a new life to me. And to me, he totally symbolizes what I have found in Alcoholics Anonymous. I know it sounds totally corny, okay, but I'm going to do it. And, you know, when I came here, I got a chance again, a chance to do things different, a chance to go through the same shit and do it the same way if I wanted to or to change it. I got a chance to look at myself and a chance finally to learn, just begin to learn how to love myself on a daily basis. And when I hold him, when I see him, I see this vulnerable, totally dependent, new little life. And I think about me and my higher power. Of course I think about me. I don't think about him very long. But but, you know, after I think about him for about 20 seconds, then I think about me, and I think about me and my higher power. And that's like me and my higher power. And so, anyhow, you know, if anybody's in this room and they're in a lot of pain, please keep coming back. You don't have to drink. You don't have to do drugs. You don't have to kill yourself through this. We can do it. The community here has helped me stay clean and sober a day at a time. And to all of you, I'm very, very grateful. Thank you. Thank you for letting me speak.